this would be the last aveira of your life, the last mitzvah of your life. But if the Zayin has to continue working in the next minute as well, the Zayin can't afford to show the child that she's happy. In the Mashal HaZayna, the conclusion of chapter 8, where the king hires a harlot woman to affect the prince negatively, and the Zayna herself is not interested that the son should listen to her. She just has to do her job faithfully. If the Zayna is hired to work with this kid for 80, 90, 100 years, if after the first time the Zayna says, okay, I'm very happy with your decision, it's over. I'm talking about after you do the taiva, although tomorrow is going to be another taiva. So the Nefesh HaBahamis does her job faithfully. Huh? Oh, that's. I told you last time in Perek Tes that Reb Shaga Feivelman, the lover of Yeshiva of Teir Vadas, once said that everything that says in a newspaper is a lie, even the date it was printed yesterday. Yeah? But after yeah? So what? Power of public relations is very powerful. It's extremely powerful. That's how we are. We're if we would be in tune with our Nefesh HaLikis, no. The Nefesh HaBahamis has this power. It has a shell, it has a husk, and it gets on you. It's, this is what's good for you. You know that yesterday you did the same thing and you regretted it. Chacham. That's what lev is. That's what the lev is. Lev is, it's irrelevant what's true. What's relevant is what I want at the moment. Zog d'Alt Rebbe, introduce your mayach. So even after he says mayach shalat l'alev, there's another battle going on in the hearts. Zog d'Alt Rebbe, that the Nefesh HaLikis is deeper than the Nefesh HaBahamis. The Nefesh HaLikis is light and the Nefesh HaBahamis is darkness. So if you follow Yechol HaYemani and not Yechol HaSmali, you'll feel good about it. Because Yechol HaYemani is more deeper. It's more inherent. More truthful. It's like light and darkness. Darkness is very powerful. Introduce light and the darkness will dissipate. And that's why he keeps on using the terminology here, I believe, Yetzer Tov, Yetzer Hara, Yetzer Tov, Yetzer Hara. Not Nefesh HaLikis, Nefesh HaBahamis. Because the Yetzer Tov is the emotional element of the Nefesh HaLikis, the Lev dimension of it. The Yetzer Hara is the Lev dimension of the Nefesh HaBahamis. And over here he's dealing with the battles of the heart. That's the first explanation of the Rebbe. Huh? Okay. Fine, naniach. Okay, naniach. You're adding another reason why a Jew feels happy when he doesn't fulfill his taiva, because the Yetzirah itself doesn't really want you to fulfill your taiva. Okay. Huh? Yeah, but the point is, it's a hard issue. There's a story told about one of the rabbis. I think it was the days of Slichus preceding Rosh Hashanah. And Slichus, of course, is the time we get up early in the morning to pray for a good, healthy new year, physically, spiritually. And, you know, a child who's under his blanket, it's quite difficult to get up 5, 6 in the morning. But parenthetically, the story is told about Reb Chaim Brisker. Reb Chaim Halevi Soloveitchik. He was once a little child, a brilliant boy, 6 or 7 years old, and he was sleeping in his bed. There was a slichus morning. His father came waking him up. Chaimel, Chaimel! Shintzaitz against the slichus, it's time to go. Chaim wasn't budging. Yeah, I'm getting out of bed. He comes back 15 minutes and he's still sleeping. He tells him, Chaimel, I don't understand you. In the days of slichus, even the fish in the sea are trembling from awe and fear of what the new year is going to bring, what judgment of Rosh Hashanah is going to bring. So he says, I promise you that if these fish would be in bed, in a warm blanket, they would also not be trembling. A couple months ago, one of the rabbis was also, they say, he was deep in asleep in one of these slichus mornings. So anyway, his father comes in and begins rebuking him. So the little child, the rabbi, says, I know it's wrong. I know it's wrong. But I have a Yetzahara. I have a Yetzahara. So he says, why don't you learn from me Yetzahara? Yetzahara never stops working, you see? Even in these wee hours of the morning, Yetzahara should be asleep. Why isn't Yetzahara asleep now? She's still working. Rav Shabbamas is still working. Not to get you out of it. Why can't you Yetzatev learn from the Yetzahara? He says, Abritate, my Yetzahara doesn't have a Yetzahara. That's the difference. You understand? You're asking why tomorrow is the same thing. If you have Shabbahamas, would have enough Shabbahamas to dilute her vision, it wouldn't be a problem. Rav Shabbamas doesn't have any enemies. The secret of the Beinoni is that he lives deep. He lives deep. He never allows the shallow husk of reality obscure his vision. Not the husk in the internal self, and not the husk in the universe. Not the shell in the microcosm or in the macrocosm. Anyway, that is the first answer the Rebbe gives. But then he adds a second answer. And I believe that he is not content with the first answer because apparently, upon the plain reading of the Tanya, the Alter Rebbe is over here discussing being victorious in the battle on all fronts. And first and foremost, it's the battle between Mayach and Lev. So he adds another dimension, which is very similar to what you said a few moments ago. There is a difference between the Beinoni and Perikid Beis and the Beinoni described here. It's a very nuanced difference, but it's an important one. In the Beinoni in Perikid Beis, the Alter Rebbe describes the Beinoni who davened, and at the time of davening, created a very powerful intellectual awareness and a passionate craving towards the Almighty. Even after davening, when that ahava dissipates, hence the Nefesh HaBahamas' ahavas come to the fore, a rishimu from the meichin of tefillah remain, which means an effect of the awareness that existed by davening remains. So this is the Beinoni who his mayach is in place throughout the whole day. So the moment there is a taiva, there is already a given awareness of what's true in life, what's untrue in life. So that awareness is there. That awareness means just not a hypothesis, an abstract one. A conviction, an ideal, a rotzen. So now what's left is to get that rotzen into the ring and battle the lev, and mayach shal to lev. What about another type of a Beinoni? A Beinoni who throughout the day is involved in worldly matters. And when you're involved in worldly matters, you're often involved not only emotionally, also intellectually. So his awareness at the moment of his involvement in other things, naturally, is not on what is the purpose in life, what is the ultimate truth in life. His awareness is then connected to Klippa. Not as a result of sinning, as a result of the fact that he's a merchant or a businessman or he has to go about his daily physical affairs. So his mayach is not in place at the moment. His mayach is involved in worldly issues. The awareness on a conscious level is not there. The intellectual awareness is not there. So when the lev experiences a craving, it's not just enough mayach shalat lev. Mayach shalat lev is a technique, but there first has to be a mayach. Mayach shalat lev. If your mayach agrees to your lev, or your mayach doesn't agree to your lev, but the mayach doesn't decide to fight, it's not enough that mayach shalat. So over here you need HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ezrei. Over here you need HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ezrei. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ezrei to access the Mayach. Because the Mayach is also displaced. And over here you need a special Ezrei. Why? Because since the Lev is now powerful and he feels it on a conscious level, and his Mayach is at this moment not in direct contrast to the Lev. The Mayach is also subservient to the Lev somewhat. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ezrei in kindling that awareness again and getting into the ring. To put it in other words, when the candle is lit, it banishes the darkness, but you have to light the candle. And sometimes there's a strong wind and it's difficult to light the candle. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ezrei to light the candle. Once the candle is lit, Mayach Shalat Lalev, Eir Deich HaChashach. But to light the candle is sometimes very difficult. And in this case, it's extremely difficult. Because it's ma'at. The oir is ma'at and the chayshach is harbe. The oir is a little light versus a lot of darkness. Why is there a little light? So we discussed in Perikid Beis. The Nefesh HaBahamas' desires, after everything said and done, are immediate, are close, are sensual. Why is it Meir Shatlov? Everyone always does Meir Shatlov. You know, tomorrow when you go to work, you all know, the customer is always right, yeah? So you're talking to this customer, and you see what type of person he is, and you want to throw him out of your office, but you keep on smiling. Why do you keep on smiling? Meir Shatlov, you control yourself. Over here, it's extremely easy. It's not necessarily easy, but everyone does it always. Why? Because you know, if you want his dollar, you have to exercise control. Your craving is to throw him out and never look at him again. But the customer's always right. Yeah, how are you? You're right. You keep on smiling. So what's pshat? Pshat is because the need for money and the craving for money is immediate. So the mayach has a natural conviction that in this case, yes, I want to fight my lev. The mayach understands that money is good and important, and the mayach wants to fight for it, so it fights the lev. But when it comes to spirituality and godliness, it's not the case. It's ma'at. That's why the Nefesh HaBahamas is called harbe, this is called ma'at. It's much more remote. It's alien. It's heavenly. It's deeper. It's much deeper. But it's not immediate. It's not close to home. It's in the books. So once you kindle the candle, the light dissipates. But to kindle it, to access it, is difficult. So once you have it already by tefillah, and that roshim is there, it's there already. So you just have to do mayach shaltel alef. But over here, we still need another step. The Beinoni's mind is involved somewhere else. To light the candle, there's a special HaKadosh Baruch Hu Oizrei. And in light of this, we'll understand why later in the chapter, the Alter Rebbe again uses the model of mayach shaltel alef. Again, the Rebbe says both of these answers very briefly, difficult to understand, but this is how I understand it. So this is also ultimately, after all this, we also understand very well the role that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ezer plays. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ezer doesn't mean, okay, I'll go to sleep, and I have two nefashas, fight it out, God, you mix it. Doesn't go like that. Similar to what the Gemara says, you know, there's a mitzvah, azev tazev imay. If you see a fellow Jew, a fellow man, could be someone that you dislike, God forbid, and his donkey falls on the ground as a result of the heavy burdens, so there's an obligation for the Jew to go and help his fellow man, azev tazev imay. So our sages tell us that the one who actually owns the donkey cannot come and say, okay, I'll go sit down on the rock, you do it. You have a mitzvah, azev tazev imay. So the Gemara, in such a case, there's no mitzvah to help him. If he's not interested in doing anything, in putting his hand to help, then you don't do anything either. I mean, you could, gesunte hate, but there's no mitzvah of azev tazev imay. You're not violating a mitzvah if you don't help him. If he goes and works, but he needs help, then there's a mitzvah azev tazev imay. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ezrei, Kadosh Baruch Hu Ezer doesn't exclude human involvement. On the contrary, once there is human involvement to the best of man's ability, then there's a Kadosh Baruch Hu Ezer. Or as the Gemara says, Habal Tayim Sayanis. Someone who comes to purify himself, he's granted relief. And that's where man's free choice comes into the picture. However, what's the however? Despite the fact that by the Beinoni is Zevezeh Shaifta, not Zevezeh Moishlam, the Nefesh HaBahamas only gets to say an opinion, but never to define the verdict, or certainly never to implement its opinion. Nevertheless, Me'ach HaSharash HaBachal HaSmali BeBeinoni, Hu B'Takfe Ketaldasai, inasmuch as the evil in the left part of the Beinoni's heart is in its native strength, craving after all the pleasures of this world, and is neither so minute as to be nullified before the good of the divine soul, as is in the case with a tzaddik, nor has it been displaced from its position to any degree. The rabbi, the Beinoni, is in its full strength. From its place, it has not been displaced. It has been displaced from extending itself, from implementing itself, from gaining control over man's body. to become a Moshel over the Ir Ketan, but in its native place, in its little location in the Chalal HaSmali, no one has touched it, no one has affected it. It's there with its full strength, as the Beinoni is in his native birth. It's not batal over there, and it's Bechlal not Nitchen. Not only it's not batal, it's not even affected, it's not even moved. Rak, just. She'ein lo shlita, it's just. She'ein lo shlita, memshala lispashet be'var Yaakov. It lacks authority and power to become diffused throughout the limbs of the body. It doesn't have the authority, the power, the dominion to extend itself in the limbs of the body and to actually compel or coerce man to live, to behave with his body based on the vision, on the perspective of the Nefesh HaBahamas. Why? Because of Hashem, who stands at the right hand of the poor man. Again, the Nefesh HaLikis is defined as poor man, and Kehelis also the Yetzer Tov is defined as a miskin, yelled, a miskin. Helping him and illuminating his divine soul so that it may prevail over the Nefesh HaBahamas. So since this is the state in the Beinoni, Lachein Nikir Karasha, therefore the Beinoni is described as being Karasha, like Karasha. And here the Alter Rebbe returns to the major question with which he began the whole Sefer HaTanya. The beginning of Tanya, the first chapter, was the Gemara says in Nida, Mashbi Maiseiti Tzadik Valti Rasha, that a soul, a person before it's born, is an oath is administered to him, be a tzaddik and don't be a Rasha. That's one part of the oath. The second part of the oath, the Gemara says in Nida, "Vafilu kol ha'olam kulo yomrim lecha tzadikata heyei beinecha karash." Even if the whole world tells you that you're a tzaddik, in your eyes you should consider yourself a rush. The Rebbe asks, "Hey, this is a contradiction to a mission in Pirkei Avos. Pirkei Avos, Perek Beis, which we will learn this Shabbos, says va'al tehi rasha b'fnei atzmach. You should not consider yourself a rush." That's a question of simply contradiction in the sources. And B. the Alter Rebbe says, logically, if a person is going to consider himself a Rasha, that will certainly result in a sense of melancholiness and depression, and won't be able to serve Hashem with joy. And if the fact that he's a Rasha will stop perturbing him, so he will serve Hashem with joy, that can create a state of kalus reish, let me say, of frivolousness, carelessness. Certain looseness and carelessness. So the question is indeed, how is a person to consider himself? If you would say, listen, when you do an aveiri, you should consider yourself a rush and feel bad and do tshuva. Fine, we understand that, but that's not what the shvua is. The shvua is, under all conditions, you should consider yourself a rush. The whole world can be telling you you're a tzaddik, and you should still consider yourself a rush. How should a person objectively and honestly look at himself? As a good person or as an evil person? In light of the above, we understand the meaning of Heyei Beinecha Karasha. Since the Beinoni, even the Beinoni, who never allows the Nefesh HaBahamas to control his life, nevertheless has the Ra within him in its full strength, and therefore he experiences a profound and real craving towards Eilam Hazeh, towards the physical husk of reality. He is defined and called Kirash. Kemay Menazal, as our sages say, Afilu kol Eilam kuli, Emer Melchat Tzadik Ata Yei Beinecha Kirash. Even if the whole world tells you you're a tzaddik, be in your own eyes like a Rasha. V'loi Rasha Mamish. He should not regard himself as an actual Rasha. Heyei Beinecha Kirash. Like a Rasha, but not an actual Rasha. Why? The Mishnah in Avos says, Va'alti Rasha b'fnei atzmacha. You shouldn't be wicked in your own estimation. But Ka Rasha, similar to a Rasha that year. Ella, what does it mean you shouldn't consider yourself as a Rasha, only like a Rasha? She'yachzik atzmi l'beinani. Rather, one should consider oneself a beinani. That's the Ki Rasha. should consider himself a bin. V'loila hamin l'ha'ilam. One should not believe the world, sha'imrim, who are saying, sha'arashaboy nizbatil l'gabi ha'tayf, that the evil in him has been nullified by the good. Shezumad regis tzaddik, for this is the level of a tzaddik. Ella, yiyah be'enav. Instead, he should take the view, ki'ilu, mohusei va'atzmusei shal hara, hu betakfayu bigvurasei b'chal lasmalik etaldas. That the essence and core of the evil is in its full native strength and mind in the left part of his heart. V'leichala v'halach m'menu mu'umah. Not having vanished or departed from him at all. Va'adirab. On the contrary, nischazik yaser. Behemshech hazman, with the passage of time, the nefshabamis has gained strength. Shinishtamish beharbi, because he utilized it considerably. Ba'achila, in eating, usiya, and drinking, usharin yoni elam has, and other mundane pursuits. What is the Alter Rebbe saying? He's not saying that if someone is constantly falling prey to the taivus of his heart, he should consider himself a beinoni. That's ridiculous, of course. Alter Rebbe is saying something else. Even the Jew who fulfills his mission on earth and lives up to become the beinoni character, and therefore, kol ha'aylam aymer l'cha tzadikata. The whole world looks at him and says, you're a tzadik. Why? Because from a behavioral perspective, he is identical to the tzadik. Both the tzadik and him, in their thoughts, words, and deeds, are totally identical. Both the tzadik and the beinoni never sin. Not in machshava, not in dibur, not in mais. So kol ha'aylam, the world, the outside world, who judge a person and view him from the outside in, not from the inside out, Aymrim l'cha tzadikat. Say our sages that an oath is administered to the neshama, don't let go. Don't throw in the towel yet. Heyei be'nacha karasha, remember that this does not indicate what your inherent state is. Your inherent state is still characterized by a serious dichotomy, where on one hand you takav enough shulkis, but on the other hand you have all those elements that the Rasha has. Just like the Rasha has an egotistical self, you also have that, and everything that is connected with. Yeah, the Rasha acts upon it. The Rasha actualized it. You may not actualize it, but you cannot leave go and feel, oh, I have reached tranquility. Why? For the Beinoni, that's very dangerous. Because the Beinoni has to struggle every day to retain that awareness that should constantly act as a counterforce to the Ra that's in him on a conscious level. So even Kol Eilam Kulem Lam Chatzadakata, Heye Beinecha Nara Rosh, but Kirosh. Now, of course, you may ask the question, were there no people in history who considered themselves tzaddikim? There were. Why and how? So the pshat is, what the Shvuah is saying is, if your knowledge that you're a tzaddik is coming from kol ha'aylam, then heyei be'necha karasha. If your knowledge that you're a tzaddik is coming from kol ha'aylam, from your behavior, then you can never be secure of what really constitutes your internal self. But if a person has sometimes a knowledge that he's a tzaddik from above, or whatever it is, not from kol ha'elam, not from his behavioral self, kol ha'elam doesn't only mean practically if the world tells it to you. It means the world dimension in you, the aspect in you which is judging yourself based on your behavior. That's not a guarantee that he'll be nach karash. I just want to conclude with one short idea. You can also call the Beinoni Kitzadik, right? Just as you can call him Kerasha, you can also call him Kitzadik. So why is it that we have to choose the Kerasha? Why don't we choose the Kitzadik? He has also an element in which he's identical to the Tzadik. So on the simple level, it's clear, because the point here is that he has to remember that he has to continue fighting. So we're not going to tell him you like a tzaddik. Fine. What's important to emphasize is your similarities, your inherent similarities to the Rasha. But there's also something deeper. And this is what Alter Rebbe is saying here. In a sense, this statement, Heye Beinecha Kar Rasha, referring to a Beinani, defines very adequately the tragedy of the Beinani. There's a tragedy of the Beinani. The tragedy of a life which is dichotomized, which is split, where there is a duality. Always, for decades, the Beinani will suffer from this duality. He will suffer from these two opposing perceptions, perspectives, consciousnesses that exist within him. Never will he achieve ultimate peace, harmony, and tranquility, because in his very essence there are two souls that are fighting with each other, that are battling with each other. Before we started to learn chapters 12 and 13 about the Beinani, I approached Shabbos and Shul two great Hasidic scholars who devoted their life to study Tanya, teach Tanya, and other Hasidic works of Chabad in general. And I asked them if they can tell me in one sentence what they like about the Beinani, how they identify personally, emotionally with the Beinani. The Beinani model that Alter Rebbe, Reb Shneur Zalman, sets forth in the Tanya as the cornerstone of his book. So the first one tells me, the Beinani is so amazing because he never loses. I go over to the other guy, I say, tell me, how would you describe the Beinani in a sentence? What do you like about the Beinani? He says, the Beinani is so special because he never wins. See, this is the Beinani. He never loses and he also never wins. The first answer makes him identical to the tzaddik. He never loses. The second answer makes him identical to the Rasha. He never wins. Kumdal Tereben says the second aspect is deeper. The Beinani is called Kirash and not Ketzatik. Why? Because the first aspect is what the Beinani does, and the second is who he is. The first aspect is what he does, how he acts, how he behaves. But the second dimension, the second response, is who he is. But the beauty and the amazing aspect of the Beinani is that despite the fact, notwithstanding who he is, he never allows that to hinder what he does. He never allows that duality and that tragic dichotomy in him to hinder his behavior, to create an obstacle in living a life which is consistent with the divine will. Why? Because despite the perception, and despite the fact that Beinani knows that he won't win, he's also very well aware of what his true self is, and what constitutes his own true good. He's also very well aware of where the second force comes from, and where those cravings come from. He realizes that he has a soul which is egotistical, inherent within him, and he also is very well aware of the purpose of having it. So it's not just something that confuses him and tears him apart. And as a result of that, he can find peace within peacelessness. He can find harmony and live a harmonious, wholesome life within a dichotomized life. Yes?
Why is it so important to emphasize that the Beinani is Karasha? I mean, the Beinani is, he's a personality of his own. Why is it important to emphasize that he's like Karasha? What's the significance?
why is it so important to remind us that he's like a Rasha? We're saying, even though it's true, as discussed earlier, why do we have to emphasize it? Hayei bein nechi k'rasha. Someone has heart problems, goes to the doctor, and the doctor cures him for the time being. If he thinks that he's totally healthy, he can let down his defenses, he cannot be so cautious about his health, and fall ill again. He must always remember that he was cured, but he has a condition that he has to take care of. So the Alter Rebbe comes and tells the Beinoni, remember, you have a heart condition. Your heart still has within it an egotistical animal. You must remember that your heart is not totally clear and holy. If he doesn't have that awareness, he can fall. And then there's an additional point. The Beinoni must have this awareness of Ayei Beinecha Karasha, not to get depressed. If he experiences ugly craving, sometimes after a long time of having only holy experiences, then suddenly experiences ugly cravings, it can really sadden him. Says the Alter Rebbe, don't get depressed. This is to be expected. This is to be expected. The animal soul is still part of you. The fact that it woke up this morning or tonight or middle of the day is a natural result of your inherent condition, of your inherent heart condition. So don't get terribly upset or melancholy, because this is expected from you. This is expected in your life. This we'll discuss more at length, God willing, next week. The second point. One of the Alter Rebbe's extraordinary chassidim was Reb Shmuel Munkus. Reb Shmuel Munkus was a deep spiritual Jew, a very pious man with a wonderful sense of humor. Reb Shmuel Munkus was a young man. He heard of the greatness of the Maggid of Lyazhna, the Alter Rebbe, and he decided to go visit him. Reb Shmuel arrived in Lyazhna in the middle of a bittery, wintry night. You know, the Russian winters are extremely cold. He didn't have an idea where the Alter Rebbe lived. He would not think of knocking on someone's door at such a late hour. But he thought that the Rebbe was still studying. So if he could find a house lit with candles, most probably it's the home of the Alter Rebbe. He went from street to street until he finally saw a house that was lit up. He knocked, and as mentioned, it was the middle of the night, so the Alter Rebbe himself came and answered the door. The Alter Rebbe asks him in Yiddish, "Was willst du? What do you want?" Shmuel says, "Ich will sich anwärmen. I wish to warm up and sleep here." So the Alter Rebbe, astonishingly, turns to Reb Shmuel and says, "So the andere Heiser, there are other homes where you can stay. I can arrange that you stay in another home." So Reb Shmuel turns to the Alter Rebbe. He says, "Das ist nicht kein jüdischer Heim. I don't understand. This is not a Jewish home. I'm coming into this home. I don't want any other home." So the Alter Rebbe turns to Reb Shmuel and says, "Ich rufe den Goy zu vertreiben dir. If you try to force your way in and you don't leave, I will have my Goy, my non-Jewish servant, to come and throw you out." Reb Shmuel began weeping and crying, and he said, "Rebbe, mein Goy is starker wie dein Goy. My guy is stronger than you, your guy." Alter Rebbe smiled and opened up the door for him. Reb Shmuel became one of his deepest and greatest chassidim. The Beinoni's guy is deep. It's strong. He must struggle with it. It challenges him. It challenges him. Day in and day out. Mein Goy ist starker wie dein Goy. The Alter Rebbe personally, by the Alter Rebbe personally, godliness was the reality. Reb Shmuel Munkus wasn't the Alter Rebbe. And the challenges of the Alter Rebbe, which were not just physical challenges, if he can go into the home physically or not go into the home physically. As Chassidim explained the story, the initial discussion between the Alter Rebbe and Reb Shmuel Munkus was defining the nature of Reb Shmuel's soul, if he is indeed fit and worthy to enter into the Alter Rebbe's spiritual home. Reb Shmuel Munkus passed the test. But every Beinoni struggles with this issue. And it's his beauty and his amazing quality that he brings in godliness and spirituality into that space where my goy is stronger than your goy, than Alter Rebbe's goy. I just wanted to add to you, you were asking before about the Mashal Hazayna, that it could be the reason you feel good is because even the animal soul ultimately doesn't want to do it. So I just realized that we can add another point. That's true. But that means ultimately that even the animal soul's heart submits somewhat to the divine heart. It also subtly agrees and acknowledges that the desires and urges stemming from the divine heart are deeper, truer, and ultimately more fulfilling. That's the whole idea of the Mashal Hazayna, the metaphor of the harlot, which discussed before at the end of chapter 9. You kept on mentioning earlier, means that subtly in the essence of the animal soul, there is also the recognition that the divine soul's desires run deeper. So, Enechanami, that's part of that Kaddish Baruch Hu Ezra. That is part and parcel of it. Yes, one last question. You want to know how deep is the Yetzirah embedded in us. They once asked the Rebbe, Reb Naftali of Rapshitz, the Holy Reb Naftali of Rapshitz, where does the Yetzirah live? Where does the animal soul, where does the evil inclination live? So Reb Naftali Rapshitz responded and said, in places that you believe he is not to be found. Have a good day and a wonderful week.
Rabbi Jacobson delivers this weekly class on the Tanya each Sunday morning at Heichal Menachem in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn, New York. To order additional tapes or to receive the tapes weekly by mail, please call Heichal Menachem at 718-633-1076.